Welcome to Holden Village. Today is the 28th of July, 1995. In the Creekside Room this morning, our speaker is Kathy Bosch, and she will be speaking on Because You Love Your Child, Tools for Parenting, Part 2. So let's listen in on Kathy.
Okay, it's not a terrible, horrible, very bad thing to make a mistake. It only is if you choose not to learn from it.
Kids are so forgiving.
Yeah.
They are.
If and then they'll be very forgiving if they see it experience, if they experience it.
Right, absolutely.
And if they don't experience it, then they don't know what it is.
I remember with our kids way back when they were, you know, if they got obnoxious and I would lose my patience with them, then sometimes I would react stronger than I, you know, more strongly than I wanted to. And then I would tell them afterwards, Mommy, sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. And so then we'd hug and squeeze them. That was teaching them forgiveness as well as helping me. I had done wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
And how do we understand God's forgiveness if we don't experience it here?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's an empty concept otherwise. Forgiveness, what's that?
Yeah, right.
Okay, I think we're at time. Let's roll the tape. I'm Catherine Bosch, and we're looking at Tools for Parenting, Because You Love Your Child, the second session. Yesterday we did some things about helping children deal with feelings and how we can help children understand what feelings are all about. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings are. It's how we choose to act on them that becomes the judgeable thing, and we have choice. Nobody sits there with a baseball bat over your head saying, now you feel this way and you're going to do it this way. And so we have choices, more choices than we are aware that we do. I'd like to look today at the whole area of cooperation, engaging cooperation. That's what I hear most from parents. I can't get them to do what I want. And the whole issue of discipline. I think they go very much hand in hand. And I think it builds on, if children feel that they are listened to, then they're going to be more willing to cooperate. And maybe the type of discipline we use as children doesn't have to be the harsh, I'm in power and you better remember your place. But that we are all God's children and God loves us, and there are things that we do to be helpful rather than hurtful to others. So we want to look somewhat at setting limits. What are our family limits? We want to look at how we can really encourage children. And I'm going to look at some things out of Faber and Majlis, how to talk so kids will listen and listen so kids will talk. I also do a session that's called Discipline, Choice, or Chance, and I want to look, you know, how do we look at the discipline that we use and whether that encourages cooperation or makes it into a power struggle. And you can tell as you see, and it's marvelous to see the number of kids around the village that we see here now, and last night's Vespers with all these children that were just as dear as can be. And to see even 3 and 4 year olds signing and keeping up and knowing the words and such, I was really quite amazed. And sometimes we really underestimate our children, what they're capable of. And I think whoever the leaders over at Narnia have found how to get children to cooperate in a very positive way, because I think they did a marvelous job last night. And even in their behavior sitting up front was very cooperative and very helpful, that we often think kids can't do. So I think we want to start looking at what are our expectations for our children. What do we really expect if they're 2 or 3 or 4 or 7 or 10 or 15 or 18? Do we have expectations for our children? And how do they know what we expect? One time we got into a conversation with our daughters who were young teenagers at the time. And we said, what is it that you think is very important to your mom and dad? And one of the first things that came out of one of them was, well, we don't ever dare smoke or we might be disinherited. I didn't think that that point had ever come across to them in that way. How do you get your values across to your children? What do we talk about? What's important? And sometimes we expect, because we live in a certain way, the kids ought to understand what's important to us. But for young children, it's what they call in schools, at least when I was in education, social learning theory. It's not just doing, but it's talking, it's describing. It's using, putting words to it. So if we talk about something that's really important, or if there's an issue, if we have an important value, we don't just do it saying, well, if I get the wrong change back from the checkout person at the grocery store, I don't just quietly put the money on the counter again. Or I don't just walk out the door with the money in my pocket and say, well, I get cheated some other time, so this evens it up. Or let's go have a soda on this because we've made some money. What are we teaching our children? So we want to look, what is it that we want to teach our child, and how can we best go about teaching what we want them to learn? So when we discover what our expectations are and get an idea of our own values, how do we teach them what's important to us? And so you might say to the checkout clerk, I think you've given me $5 too much. I gave you $20 and the bill was $15.02, and you've given me back a $5 bill plus $4.98, and I don't want you to have to cough this up at the end of the day. What does that say to your child that's there? Well, mom's honest, or dad's honest, or dad doesn't try to take advantage of someone else. So maybe that's important to them, and that's important to me. Because a lot of other people are going to be there of all ages, generally kids, their peers, who are going to be saying, if you get it, take it and run. And is that what we really want to teach our children? So we want to figure out, what is it that we really want to teach our child, and how can we best go about helping them to learn? So we've got a lot of things that we might talk about, the way that we probably have, most of us have probably experienced. Now, I had my background in training and my master's degree in child and family studies before I had any children. And I had done parenting work before I had children. But by the time I had children, a lot of it were sort of in dusty corners along the way, and I had to relearn a lot of things. And so now when we have our first grandchild that's just about 3 weeks old now, and talking with our daughter about children and what, we can pick up a lot of pieces of things that I would certainly do differently if I had to be a parent all over again. And I think we all, in our different situations, it's not that we want to point a finger at our own parents and said, you really did a lousy job of teaching me or raising me, but to say that in this particular situation that we're living in, and the two people that come into this relationship as parents, these are the things that we're going to try to get across to our child. And not, I think, and that's why I label my course, Because You Love Your Child. I think all parents love their children and want their children to become the best that they're capable of being. I think all your parents loved you and wanted you to become the best that you were capable of being. But there are certainly a lot of things in my family that I wouldn't want to have my own children experience. And so I can say they tried to do the best that they could, but I've done a lot of other work in this, and I feel some other things in other ways, look at some other options and some choices. And not looking in terms of right or wrong, but looking in terms of what is it that I really want to teach my child, and how can I best go about teaching them? And for the particular situation that we're in at this time. So I think many of us have been raised with trying to teach us in ways that probably put down our self-esteem more than our parents ever wanted it to. And probably, I don't think my parents, my mother was an immigrant person. My father, I think, probably had finished fourth or fifth grade, which was appropriate for his age, for his day in that community. They didn't have some of the advantages that maybe you and I have had in our own education and experience. So let me do a little exercise. We talked yesterday about feelings, and I want to get you in touch with your feelings. And I'm going to use some kinds of responses that probably we have all said at one time or we have all heard at one time, and just get your reaction. You're all children right now. You can take the role of one of your own children or any age child that you want to sort of be and play that role for just a couple of minutes while I read some things to you. So, if I wanted to change your ways and I said, "Your dirty fingerprints are all over the door again. Why do you always do that? What's the matter with you anyway? Can't you ever do anything right?" How many times do I have to tell you to use the doorknob? The trouble with you is you never listen. What are your feelings?
Defensive.
Defensive?
You hit us with about six different ones.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. Yeah.
What do I respond to?
I'm no good. Worthless.
Worthless.
I never do anything right.
Maybe we want to start justifying myself.
Okay, so you start excusing yourself and maybe even blame it on somebody else. You're being blamed, and what you want to do is deflect that onto somebody else. It's really not my fault.
Or you lie. I didn't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes me feel like it's not even worth it to try and explain myself because she's already told me what I am.
I've labeled you with some indelible ink, and it's going to stay there. Anytime we use the words always and never, we wipe out any other possibilities. You always do this or you never do this. Never? Can anyone ever say never? I can remember learning very young in school that if you ever had a true and false test and the word always or never was in the statement, you knew it was false because nothing is always or never. Okay. How about this one? We'll wipe that slate clean. We'll go on to another one. It's below freezing today and you're wearing a light jacket. How dumb can you get? Boy, that's really a stupid thing to do. Or, here, let me fix that for you. You know how unmechanical you are and how you always break things. Or, look at the way you eat. It's disgusting. You're a pig. Or, what we often say to our kids with their rooms, you have to be a slob to live in such a filthy room. You live like an animal. I ought to put you in the pig pen. How do you feel?
Incapable.
Feel
absolutely right. Way down.
Way down, sort of crawling along, very incapable, just very...
almost giving up hope.
Give up hope? Why bother trying? So... what often happens, instead of encouraging me to do something better, I say, well, you get the name and you play the game. So, well, that's the way you expect me to be. Back to expectations again. If you expect me to be a slob, I'll be one. If you expect me to be mean, I'll be mean. If you expect me to be slow and a klutz, I'll never get anything worked out right because that's just what I am. How about threats? Just you touch that lamp once more and you'll get a smack. If you don't spit that gum out this minute, I'm going to open your mouth and take it out. If you're not finished dressing by the time I count three, I'm leaving without you.
You want to challenge that? So let's see what happens.
Yeah. I like this little cartoon of, I think it was For Better or For Worse, when Lizzie and Mike were still school-age children. And they were making a big mess. And Mom says, "You better clean that up by the time I count three." So she says one, and Lizzie and Mike look at each other. She says two, and they look up at her. And she says three, and they're still looking at her. And she says, one? You know, really, what do you, if you, we don't get it done by the time you count three, what are you going to do? And she didn't know either. Anything else? Threats. How do you feel when somebody hands a threat to you?
There's a lot of hatred in it.
Yeah.
Against us.
Yeah. There's some challenge and there's also some strong feelings against the person who's threatening you. How dare you threaten me? Or you must not care for me. Or you don't think I've got any abilities. Okay, this is one we use all the time. But still, get into your child cap and tell me what you think. You still didn't take out that garbage. Do it now. What are you waiting for? Move. I said it right now.
No respect.
Okay, no lack of respect, no respect. Command, don't we often command our kids?
We tell them to say please, but we don't do it ourselves.
So what is it that we really want to teach our children, and how can we best go about teaching what we want them to learn? What kind of models? The commands. There are always a place for some commands. Quick, close the door before the dog gets out. Shut off the gas, the tea kettle's boiling. Or catch the glass, the baby's knocking it off the table. Or, you know, that there's some safety measure there. So commands may have their place, but it's also one of those things like no, don't overuse it. Can you think, let's take a little digression here. Can you think of alternatives to no? I mean, When kids reach about age 18 months, especially two, what's their favorite word? No. Why?
Because mommy, they hear it so often.
I mean, I said yesterday, don't ask the question why, but I knew you weren't going to say because. They say the word no because that's what they hear so often. And we need to find ways to say no without saying no. So that when we do say no, it's not an overused statement.
I don't like it when you do that.
Okay.
Or I don't like it. I don't like that.
Okay. Okay.
You could say, do this other thing.
Okay. Offer alternative.
Let's find something else to do.
Offer what they can do. We so often say don't. And I remember when our first daughter was born, the dean of the College for Human Development lived two houses from us, and she was sort of the neighborhood grandmother, because she didn't have grandchildren at the time. And I remember her saying, just a reminder, children never hear the first word that you say. So if you say, don't run, they'll hear you say, run, and they'll want to obey you, and so they'll go running off. If you say, don't touch that, what they'll hear is, touch that, and they want to obey you, so they'll touch it. So, in church a couple Sundays ago, there was a little 2.5-year-old, 3-year-old, and the parents had been in a parenting class and they had just finished, and they came up to tell the story did I hear so-and-so talking during the sermon? And I said, no. And they said, he started talking, and I said, you have to listen because you have to listen to the pastor. And he said, well, he's talking, why can't I talk? And then she said, I guess maybe it would have been more helpful to say, this is a time to be quiet so we can hear the pastor. You know, that was what he can do rather than don't talk. Well, why can't I talk? He's talking. So sometimes it's more helpful to offer what they can do rather than, because they can always have a smart comeback. We call this one grandmother's rule because it's been around for so long. It's that when, then. Can you figure out when you have put away your toys, then we can have a snack. When you have brushed your teeth, then we can and gotten into your pajamas, then we can have a story. When, then. Another part of that is as soon as we can. So instead of saying, no, don't do that, or no, not now, you can say, as soon as you get your coat on, then go out for a walk. As soon as you carry the plate to the sink, we can go play or get out the paints or get out the colors. Or as soon as you clean your room, you can go out to the movies with your friends. Another one is stop. Then tell what it is, or tell why. Such as, stop, hitting hurts. And then what you can do. So it's three parts. There's one, stop. Two, tell why. And three, tell what they can do. Stop, hitting hurts. Tell me what you need. Stop, the ball can break a lamp. You can roll the ball in the house or play with it outside. Stop. I need to talk about when you need to use the car, when I need to use the car. We need to put up a schedule for when you need or when I need, or we need to do some problem solving, why and what we can do. So instead of saying no, it's another alternative to it. And as you've got older kids, as they get into school age, particularly probably from 7 on up, and especially with teens, convince me. Mom, I need to go to the library. I need some money to go to the mall tonight. Convince me. You know, Barbara Coloroso, that's one of her favorites. Barbara Coloroso says, why should I waste my energy giving all the excuses why they shouldn't do it when they've got all the energy and they need the experience of thinking? So, because you can always say, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. But they may find the point that says, I'm convinced. But even with school age, younger school age kids, to get them to thinking, convince me. Tell me why. Tell me what's behind it all. Tell me what you need and why you need it. So those are some of the possibilities. And it's also helpful to remember not to use. If you don't, then. Because if is a very important challenging word. It's like the 1, 2, 3 or the why.
I find with my daughter, she's in this exploring stage, and she often will do things that are dangerous, or she could possibly get hurt. And I don't know how often, if I manage to be able to tell her, don't do such and such, you might hurt yourself, then she'll say, I'll be careful, and I need a better way to stop her from doing something and explain to her that could be dangerous. You didn't get hurt this time.
Yeah.
You can't understand that.
There's two possibilities of working with that. There's probably more, but let's start with these two. One is, and she's 2.5?
Four.
So when you've got preschoolers around, what are the kinds of things that you can eliminate or change or modify how you can modify the environment to prevent some of this from happening? Mm-hmm. So we call it childproofing. where your child preventive care.
Well, I hope it's
yeah. And there's some things you just cannot. I remember being in my nephew's house and was helping with a meal, and I said to my nephew's wife, where are the knives? She had a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. And she said, they're up in the cupboard over the stove. I really have to put them there because I can't, you know, I've set the limit, but there's always a challenge. Brian is always challenging the limit, and I have to be careful about the knives. Okay, that's one. Modifying the environment. The other is just setting the limit and saying, in our house, we don't do this. Or this is not allowed. This is something that at this time we're not doing, or that we can't. What are your family limits? What do your do your children know, or does it, you know, come out of the air whenever it's needed? Because sometimes we allow them to do something because that's the day we feel fairly flexible or things are going okay, and then we get to an uptight day where everything is really coming to a head and we're harried and our limits are much tighter. I often will suggest that people take a 3-hour, pick a time when the children are up and around, not when they're sleeping or out at the neighbors, when they're around for maybe 3 hours, and keep a list that maybe you divide a paper and put acceptable behavior on one side and unacceptable behavior on the other side, and then just jot down what happened, and you put the initial of whoever it was if you've got several children, and then look at, you know, at the end of the 3 hours, which list is longer, and a lot of people are surprised that the okay list is longer, but we don't look. And we aren't as aware of the things that they do that are okay. I mean, there's a lot of things throughout the day that they may say the please, the thank you, and they come and get you, bring something for you, and they pick up something, and they say some nice words to somebody, or they answer the telephone properly, or they pick up some things that have been left around that we don't respond to. But we pick out when they don't do the things that we expect them to do. For one, we take for granted, and the other, we think we've got to change because we don't want them to keep being misbehaving. And then to look at that same list a couple of days later, and would things on the unacceptable side be acceptable today? One day they may be unacceptable, and the next day they may be acceptable. Certain things. Sometimes they're always the same. But it's an awareness exercise for you to do to see how often do you really catch your children doing okay things. I think it was a research project that was done in Cleveland, Ohio some years ago where they sent out graduate students in child development into homes where there were 2-year-olds to just with 2 clickers, 2 counters. And every time that the child was appreciated or acknowledged, they click the positive. And every time there was a stop this, don't do that, and a kind of negative behavior, they click the other. At the end of a 2-hour period, the numbers on the not so good behaviors were something like 20 times what was on the okay behaviors. And so we want to really look to see what's the ratio of appreciation to criticism. And then, as Ann Landers would say, don't sweat the small stuff. I mean, can we decide what the small stuff is? Now, sometimes what some people think is small stuff, other people would think is really big stuff, you know, because it may have to do with safety or it's just something that's very uncomfortable with them. And that has to be at least something that both parents or whoever is involved in the parenting of the child have to agree on. Otherwise, they're going to have a lot higher ratio of criticism to appreciation, and that's not helpful in the parenting role. So to look at what our own expectations are, and how do we show appreciation and how do we show criticism? So sometimes it's developing your own awareness. Well, we'll go back away from... commands. There are sometimes commands are very important, and we want to make sure that we don't overuse commands so that when there's a real strong need, it won't be. They're always commanding me to do something. How about warnings? And that's what you brought up just a minute ago. Get back into your child head and its sense of feelings, and tell me how you would respond to these stuff. Don't climb there. Do you want to fall? Put on your sweater or you'll catch cold. Warnings. How'd you feel?
My mom thinks I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Or let me see. Maybe I won't burn myself.
Yeah, I see it differently. Yeah.
Oh, you see, we can come, and it can be the same person can feel it differently at different times, depending upon what they've just experienced. So we, none of these are wrong. They're just all possibilities.
Well, no, I was saying that the child would say, "I see this differently."
Oh, okay.
I can say it. That's what's just my
priority. Sure. I can do it.
I'll be careful.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how can you say, I know you'll be careful, but I feel uncomfortable or I do not think it is safe, and so this is something that is just a non-negotiable or this is off the limits?
Okay,
a 12-year-old deciding to wanting to go out on a date with a 17-year-old might be a non-negotiable. You'll have your non-negotiables, and I think you might make it clear to kids. What are some of your non-negotiables?
I felt like the burning is a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
I didn't feel anything wrong with that at all. Watch it, you'll get burned. It's very legitimate.
Yeah, and in a sense, there's a command there. The stove is hot and dangerous. It's not a plaything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you can set a limit. Sometimes we end up putting a lot of watch outs, so that we take the kind of challenge out of childhood, or make some kids, it depends upon a personality type, make some kids very fearful when that may not be the basic, that may not be what we want to teach them. And so we may have to find out a different way to get across what we want them to learn, because the way we're teaching it is teaching something else. So we may have to say, I think playing around the stove burners, for instance, a gas stove that's got flames, playing with paper around the gas stove when the stove is on is off limits. It is too dangerous. I know you will try to be careful, but there are even times I get my pot holder too close and I frighten myself, and I know I've been doing this a long time. So it's just off limits. That's not a place to play with paper. Where can they play with it? Whereas you can be on the floor right by me. And if they want to be nearby, and instead of being on the counter right by the stove with some paper that can get toward the flame, you can play on the floor over here, or you can do this over here. It's your choice. And one of the other things is we're trying to encourage cooperation and also that sense of responsibility is to use choices. So we can offer, when we're saying this, I cannot allow this, or this is off limits, that we offer choice. And you can say, playing with paper on the counter by the gas stove is off limits. You may play with it on the floor here, or you can find something in that drawer to play with. You choose. And that second part of it, you choose, is very important, so it gives them a little bit of power. You're giving them some possibilities. And should they decide to continue to play by the stove with that paper, to say, I guess you've decided that I should take the paper away from you. because this is an off limit. You may still do such and such or such and such.
But you
have to follow through.
Can you give them a choice between something and nothing? For instance, if I say, we have cookies for dessert, and my daughter will say, I want ice cream. And I said, well, I'm sorry, we have cookies, or you can have no dessert. Is that fair? Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have any ice cream, or I don't want to give her that right now.
Yeah. The choice is...
That's not really a choice, is it?
It's not a choice. You know, is there another alternative that is, for some reason, you don't want her to have the ice cream?
Or we don't have any.
Or we don't, the choice is not any ice cream because we just don't have any.
It's not an option.
So it's an option. You may have a cookie or you may decide not to have any dessert at all. That's your choice. A non-choice would be what I remember one father saying to me in a nursery school program I was doing. Where he said, I always give my children a choice. I say, you stop that or you get a spanking. I'm not sure that's the choice that they're going to learn a lot from. So, you know, you may, and we didn't put that. So, in a sense, another alternative to know is you may... or you choose.
Yeah.
And that gives them, you know, that's back to here, it tells them two things that they can do that are acceptable to you. And it really means you do a lot of thinking, but it also helps your child to do some decision making and to take some responsibility for those decisions. So it's not always you're mean as the parent who's setting a limit, but I've got a choice.
But can you take choice too far? I mean, I've been at friends' house with four-year-olds, and you sit down to dinner, and it's, I don't want to eat anything here. Okay, what would you like to have?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. The mother gets up, makes a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, the kid takes one bite. No, I don't want this. I want Cheerios. Mother gets up, literally.
Yeah. And so part of that is, you know, what is it that I really want my child to learn? And how can I best go about teaching that? So are you teaching your child that mom is a short order cook and that they can run you ragged? Or do you want to teach that you have some limits? And you might talk, I think Barbara Coloroso always also has a little piece on eating. In her videotape, and her byword is picky eaters come from panicky parents. And, you know, if we say to the child, you have to eat, then we're probably going to get some resistance and some resentment. I'm not going to, you can't make me. It's just like you can't make a kid go potty. That's one. There's a couple of power plays that kids have that you can never win. You can't make a kid go potty when they choose not to. You can't make a kid eat when they choose not to. And you're going to have that power play, so it's better not to even try that. I think one of the best ways to help kids become positive eaters is to involve them in getting some of the food ready. Have them be a participant in getting some food ready for the table. And in kids that are 2 and 3, are going to have a lot of, you know, no's, I don't like this. And probably all they need is a couple of times, you know, when they're, if you know that there's something that's going to be new, you know, whether they'll probably be more likely to take a taste of it if they hear the adults who are around say, hey, this is tasting pretty good. Haven't had this for a while. Thanks, you know, thanks for serving it. And they see somebody else liking it. And then they become curious about it. And they'll be more willing to give it a try rather than saying, you aren't going to leave this table until you finish your broccoli. And maybe it goes by the first couple of times and they choose not to take any of it. And if you keep, without making a real play or a real drama out of it, say, I really like that. That tasted very good. It was good to have that as a change. Then they're quite likely. When our kids were little, we found one of the most helpful things is to have a favorite babysitter for a meal and let her tell some of the stories of her own eating. And I can remember our kid's favorite babysitter was the oldest of 12 children. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, one of the rules in our family was you had to eat as much as your own age of whatever it was. So if you were 3, you had to have 3 peas. If you were 12, you had to have 12 peas. And when you got a little bit, you know, got over 3 or 4, you forgot to count. But the other thing she said my mother did was we always had a bottle of lemon juice or a container of lemon juice on the table. And any vegetable tastes better with lemon juice. Our kids started to eat lemon juice on their vegetables and they ate everything because they heard this person that they like talk about it. Now, we also had a young fellow who lived with us who thought mushrooms were terrible. And he said, yuck, you like mushrooms. I mean, they were eating mushrooms. You like mushrooms. They stopped eating them. And it wasn't until we finally said to him, you know what's happened. And we found a way to fix mushrooms sometime where he would eat them. And then he said, hey, you know, they're really not so bad. I guess I like them after all. And they started to eat them again. But it's surprising what influence other people can have. So having children help prepare the food. Barbara Coloroso also says another way to get kids to eat vegetables that they may not like to eat is to give them to them frozen. Give frozen peas, frozen beans, frozen carrots, because they don't taste like peas, beans, and carrots. They taste like frozen. And kids will eat them. And if they're hungry before the meal, instead of saying they want a cookie or they want a cracker or what they want a piece of bread, which is sort of filling, say, okay, let's put out some peas in this little bowl. Even if they eat that whole bowl, they've had all their vegetables for the meal. Or get them involved in scraping the carrot or helping to wash the broccoli or clean something. And they can start that very early. We invited a young couple to have dinner with us one time who had a 2-year-old. And I got home a little bit late, and so I still had a salad to do, and my friend said, can I help you with anything? And I said, I need this. We had some lettuce from the garden. I need the lettuce washed. And she said, oh, Katie's a great lettuce washer. And by that time, I looked around, and Katie was drawing a chair from our breakfast table. And we were an old house that had some different levels, and you had to bring it up a step to get into the kitchen. So we helped her pull it. Chair up the kitchen. She pulled it up to the sink, stood on the chair at the sink, and had a great time washing all this lettuce. Mm-hmm. And she ate a big salad, which you don't often think of 2-year-olds eating, because she helped. So the more we get kids involved, and sometimes it's just the biggest pain. They'll make a mess. There was water around. We had a wood floor, but we also realized that one thing we needed was a rug in front of the kitchen sink. So you got splatters, it went on the rug, not on the wood floor. But to get them involved in being a participant, not only does it build their self-esteem of I can do, but they become more cooperative in it. Comparisons. How many of you remember being compared as a child? Now look at how well Mary does it. Or the terrible thing, if you're the younger child who just happened to do something and the older decided not to do it for some reason, and then they have the parents say, well, look at the baby can do that. And you're so much older. Why are you? You're going to be a baby now? And all that put down. Do you remember some of the feelings you had when you were compared?
Hated them,
the other person that you were compared with. It doesn't motivate you necessarily. The rare times it does are rare enough, and that can be done in other ways. Whatever has to be said about what you're doing can be said about you alone without reference to anyone else. And this is especially true of report cards. So when you go back into the school system and report card time comes, deal with each child individually. Tell me how you feel about the report card. How did you like this course? What are some of your plans? And, you know, however they go up in their responsibilities. But even the kindergartner, the first grader, tell me about how you feel. You know, how do you feel about this? Get their ideas.
Do you think it's appropriate to say something like, if you want to try and motivate one child to do something that other children are doing, maybe in a group, to say, I like the way so-and-so is doing, and then describe it?
Sure. You can always describe what's helpful to be done. I see the blocks being picked up, and that means that work is already done. Whether you put the person's name on it or not, you might say, thank you, Mary, for putting the blocks away. Better than saying, see how well Mary has put the blocks away, and then kids might still want to get after Mary.
Is that getting that negative message across?
Tell me again.
I like the way Mary's putting the blocks away.
I think it's okay. Yeah.
I've used it before in teaching situations. I just wanted to know.
If Mary is always the one that's being pointed out, though, you may end up getting some resentment. If you can use it pretty evenly around, and look at how John has done such and such, and look at how Susie has done, and find something that everyone has done so that everybody gets complimented in some way. So that they all feel that there's a sense of encouragement and that there's not just one king of the mountain or one goody-goody two-shoes. Mm-hmm. That can have backfiring, too. What can help us instead? If some of these things are not going to be helpful, what can we do instead in encouraging cooperation and part of our whole area of discipline. I think it's helpful to describe. And I often hand out little 3x5 cards and have people write just the word describe on it and put it up on the refrigerator for a week as a reminder. Describe what you like. What you just said, I like the way Mary put the blocks away. Describe something you like. What's your expectation was. What you need. What you see. I see some papers that need to be picked up. I need some help in setting the table. I like the way you're having such fun with that game. I like the way how nice your kids are playing. Sometimes that puts a crown on the head that they feel uncomfortable with, so the next thing they're going to do is start poking each other. They want to get that crown off because they know they're not always good. And so if you describe what they're doing, rather than saying, you're such good kids, to describe what you're doing, it looks like you're having a lot of fun playing that game. I like hearing your laughter when you're working together. Describe what you like, what you need, what you see. Another is to give information. Milk that's left out on the counter spoils and heat. Doors that get left open let in a lot of flies or let out the dog. We need to leave in 10 minutes. Should I set the timer on the clock? One of the things I've decided to do in recent years when we have friends who have children is to give one of these little portable timers. Or give it as a gift to the parent when the child reaches about 2 years, a two-year birthday. Because the timer can become a reminder that's an outside thing. It's not mom or dad. Come on, we've got to hurry up and do this. But to say, the timer's going to tell us when 10 minutes is up.
I have described what I've done now for three children. When my oldest was about three, or two, or one. She didn't want to leave a friend's house, but a lot of deadlines have to be missed. we have to go. And so I'll count to five. Either you can go nice, or I'm going to take you rough. Mm-hmm. And over the years, it's one. Okay. You know, I didn't even get to two a lot of times.
See, what you've also had to do is that you've had to say what you mean what you say, and do what you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
And if you would have ever forgotten, or didn't count, or let it go up to 10 or whatever, then they know they've got you sometime, and they'll keep testing whether they'll get away with it another time. So, and we can say, you know, sometimes it's helpful to say we're going to leave in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So we can finish your game, or we have to put these things away before we leave. You have a choice. You can leave happily, or we'll just leave with you sad, and I'll pick you up and carry you off. You can leave on your own 2 feet or up, or me carrying you.
The same thing about going back to choices. I have two. Well, my son was never like this, but my daughter is so independent. Are you going to do it, or am I going to do it? And she has a choice, and she usually chooses to do it herself.
Okay.
But and it's not a threat. It's just, who's going to do it? Are you going to do it, or am I going to do it? Mm-hmm. Put your pants on, or I'm going to do it. And so,
do you want to do it by yourself, or do you want me to help you?
Yeah. Sometimes she says you do it.
Sure.
But her vocabulary didn't start until after she was two, so it was like.
And you bring up an important point. Kids are going to be their own moms. You'll never have two kids. Even twins may not respond the same way. We have friends with twin girls who are now three, and we spent a week with them earlier this year. They're dear, but they are very different. And, and other than twins, no two children ever come into the same family. Because the first child comes in, and they're the only child. Any children that come along come in as number two, five, seven, whatever that number is, and there's a whole different configuration and a different means of operation in that family. So don't expect carbon copies, because it doesn't happen. So give information. Say it with a word. Sometimes my problem was that I just used too many words. And I remember my daughter, when she went off to university, telling about a new boyfriend, and she said, "Mother, you'll like him because he tells long stories." I met him and I did like him. But some we have to learn, and it was a thing I always had to remind myself: the shorter, the better, because kids tune out after too long. You say it in a sentence. If you can say it instead of a paragraph, use a sentence. If you can use instead of a sentence, use a couple of words. Fine. If instead of a couple of words, use one. Even better. So how can we condense it? It might say the lights, the dog, the milk. Maybe two words. I mean, if you just want to highlight something as a reminder. Time. Under describe, we can also add describe what you feel. We can also call that an I message. When I see kids fighting, I feel scared, because I'm afraid someone is going to get hurt, or something is going to get hurt. And then we can add a what I need. I need children who can talk things out to solve a problem. So that no one's going to get hurt. Write a note. And it works not only with kids, it works with other adults. One of the teachers teaching our parenting classes back in Waterloo Region was a family studies teacher who did not have children. And she looked younger than her years. And so she couldn't tell about, she does not, she decided, she said, gave me a call one day and she said, I finally decided that I would follow some of my parents' advice to me. I'm pregnant. To say that they were saying, well, you really, to teach parenting courses, you really ought to be a parent. So she decided she'd be a parent, but anyway. So she would draw notes that she would leave for her husband. And one of the things that bothered her was that he'd always throw his underpants, just missed the clothes basket. And they'd lie in the basket. So she drew this pair of jockey shorts, quite descriptive, I mean, quite well done. And the basket with a little note saying, I want to be with my friends. Tacked it to the basket, and she said after she did that, she never had to pick them up from the floor. But there was enough of a sense of humor. Parents have reported that their kids will say, I like notes better because they don't come with an attitude. You don't hear that voice. Your note will be much shorter than what we normally say in our lectures to them. So in encouraging cooperation, problem solving. You know, I've got a problem, so maybe combine a couple more of these. And this, I think, is really, if we look at what is it that we really want to teach our child and how can we best go about teaching it, even starting with age 3, if you have a verbal child, you can begin to do some problem solving. And you need to fit in what we talked about yesterday in listening for feelings. When you have a problem with a child, to be able to figure out why they're doing what they're doing. I often use a tape that comes from the Parent Effectiveness Training Program where Bonnie, who is age 3, doesn't want to get dressed in the morning. She dawdles. And there are times, mom is a single parent and she has 2 kids who go off to school and one younger than the 3-year-old who still takes naps, a baby. And she teaches some mornings and teaches some nights. So some mornings that she's really in a hurry to get the kids off to school, to get the other two to the nursery school. And the 3-year-old Bonnie is always dawdling. So she begins to talk to Bonnie at the breakfast table. Takes about 7 minutes from the time she begins until she finishes. And she finds out why Bonnie is dawdling. And it's not because she just doesn't want it. She thinks maybe the nursery school isn't fun or enriched enough for her, or she's bored with it. And what Bonnie tells mom is, I want some time with you. I mean, what finally comes around, I never see you. You're going off to teach a class, or there's a babysitter named Susan, and I don't have any time with you, because there's also a baby around. And so it's not the nursery school. It's not because she's ornery or obstinate. It's because when she dawdles, mom comes and helps to get her dressed. So if she wants mom around, what better way to do it than to dawdle, even though it's not always happy time. So mom decides that she would, when the youngest one is napping, and she says, and besides, you're not taking any naps anymore, and the little girl very cleverly says, I get a nap at nursery school. Besides, we're not talking about naps. Brings mom back to the subject again of dawdling. And so mom decides to spend that nap time with just Bonnie. And I hear groans from all the parents, you know, if mom says, may I spend a couple of hours while so-and-so is sleeping? And Bonnie says, I'd like that. And everybody sort of groans listening to this tape saying, I don't have 2 hours to spend with one child. But the end of the story is that they finished out the week doing this, and then the weekend came and they went on a different schedule. And when Monday came around again, mom was going to ask Bonnie what she wanted to do that afternoon. And Bonnie said, oh, that's okay, you can do what you want. I've got some other things to do. So it wasn't that she had to do that forever and ever, amen, but that she wanted to know that when she wanted mom, there was some time she could have with mom. So problem solved. Sometimes what the problem is relates to something entirely different than what you think it's going to be. Well, we're at the end of our time. Just want to show a couple of cartoons. Here's For Better or For Worse, Lynn Johnston. A long time ago, here's Michael. Michael's now in college. But here he is building something, it falls, and he goes, screams, and he starts again, and it falls, and he screams, and he finally gets so mad, and he says, dumb, stupid, crummy, and he kicks it. And mom comes and pulls him away, and he says, "No, Wah, I don't want to go to bed, Wah." And then she puts him in bed, and he says, "Mom, aren't you going to kiss me goodnight?" And she says, "To tell you the truth, Mike, when you act like that, I just don't feel like kissing you at all." And he says, "But Mom, that's when I need it the most." Sometimes when we feel the least like it, that's what we need. Here's another one. When he was young, Michael and his little friend are fighting in the back seat of the car, and Mom is driving, saying, "I'm not taking you boys anywhere if you can't behave." Now listen to all these warnings. And she says, "We're nearly there, so shape up. Any more fooling and we don't go in," they're at the pool. "Cut out the splashing or we won't go to lunch. That's it, you two, we're taking you straight home." But they're at the restaurant. And the waiter's bringing two milkshakes, and Mom says, "I said no milkshakes if you can't eat nicely." But they're coming anyway. You're lucky you both didn't get spanked in public.